Thank you for that smattering of applause. If you use social networking, you would know, in fact, that I've been horizontal for the last several days with a horrible case of food poisoning. That's what you're missing, sir, for not being on the Twitter. Isn't that exciting? You could have known this ahead of time. Yeah. And if I stay vertical through this entire talk, then I will expect some appropriate tweeting of congratulations. So this is a, you can give a talk on social networking, but I want it to be as much a conversation as anything. So I would encourage people to interact. I don't want to talk at you guys, because that's not what social networking is about, right? Social networking is not a monologue. It's not a big speech in front of a bunch of people. And of course, I have to give kudos to the Winelec folks for being kind of revolutionary in the sense that they're letting me talk to you guys. It is not in any way my intent to waste your time. You guys are a bunch of developers. You're here to hear Richter talk about stack traces, and you want to hear Robbins aggregate the free-threaded marshaller. You want some like low-level comm stuff or whatever they talk about here. So I don't want to waste your time, but I want you to make this as much your talk as it is mine. So please do interrupt, and let's have a conversation. So developing in the 80s and 90s, and I apologize ahead of time for not being over 50, was like this, right? Do we remember these times? What was this like? How did we spend our time? We basically had these two books, and we were alone. We were all by ourselves, and it was not really a social experiment very much. If it wasn't in these books and it wasn't in your brain, then it very likely didn't get done. Developing was about walking around and finding someone smart that knew what they were talking about and maybe had done it before. And you looked like this guy when you were done. And you spent time writing code like this, right? And in environments like this, there was no IntelliSense, there was no syntax highlighting. I spent a lot of time on giant, 22-inch X-term monitors doing all this work in VI. And if it didn't exist in the room, the answer, then it very likely wouldn't get done. Or if it didn't exist in TurboVision, where I spent a lot of my time. And then, of course, in the 1880s and the 1890s, we did this kind of work. Anyone still have one of these machines? Anyone work on one of these machines? The idea that we would actually go to work in a suit, it was just magical to me. That's what captures my fascination, kind of captures my imagination about those times. It's not the punch cards or the speed of the machine or the idea that we had, 1K as a society to use. But it was the idea that programmers would go in suits. And he had like a little pair of spats on, things to hold up his socks. But the social interaction at that point was largely limited to kind of talking about things, trying to figure out how do you become a better developer, as you find the smartest developer and you hang out with that person as long as you possibly can. And then if you were lucky and you had a wire between a couple of computers, you would do something like this. You would try to be social, because developers, in my experience, try to be as social as possible while avoiding all human contact. The idea being that if I could talk to another human without seeing that they're another human, that would be even better. And in this case here, we don't even know if Alice was a real person or not. And then these days came, right, where you were only as good a developer as which version of the MSDN disks that you had. Where someone would say, oh, April? Oh, dude, August. August is where it's at, You've got a bunch of April, you can't get anything done with April. Wait for August to come, then those disks are way better. And then there was a kind of a blurred line, when you'd go online to get documentation, where MSDN was loaded locally, you'd have like 20 disks, and then there was a moment when it didn't matter that the disks were there, and then they stopped coming, and then they were online, and it wasn't a huge deal. I mean, we all still have that fear when we push F1, where we might as well just go have coffee because help is about to prepare and nothing's going to get done for the next little while. You're trying to hit F2, you bump F1. Oh no, Visual Studio, please stop. You remember Pointcast? Was that not the best time, the heyday, when everyone shared a 56K modem and bringing down Pointcast shut the entire company down. Interestingly, though, RSS operates in the exact same method. It's still point-to-point, and it didn't shut down the internet. And then there's also the aspect of Google or Bing. I like to Google with Bing. I would encourage you also to Google with Bing. It's a great verb, Google. Is anyone here who would willing to admit that they would not really be a programmer were it not for Google? Yeah, see, one person has the two people. Thank you, Phil Weber, for having the strength to stand up, and the rest of you liars that are here saying that you could actually turn off IntelliSense, unplug a network cable. Maybe the guys from Winelec could pull that off, but I'm sorry, without being able to search the documentation, I would very likely not be a programmer today. Again, using Bing to Google. The point, though, is that as we try to connect people, you hear things like 75% of devs use at least one social network. Is anyone here who is not on any social network? You say that with pride. Yeah. Are you on the internet here, sir? Not yet? Okay, well, you may have connectivity problems that are preventing you from getting on Facebook. That's a little bit different problem. So the very few people. Now, this was a 2009 survey at the beginning of the year, but I didn't see a lot of hands, certainly not a quarter of hands go up. Now, you're a special group in the sense that you're here on a weekday, and you're at a conference. So that already puts you at the most alpha of alpha geeks, which is something to think about. Ordinary people would be on vacation, but you're at Microsoft campus, hoping to go to the company store at some point. Two-thirds of people use more than two social networks. And what I'm proposing is that you can be a better developer from using social networks, not just to find classmates, because honestly, if I wanted to hang out with those people, I would still know them. But the significant statistic here is that 90% of us use blogs, and we agree with that, but only 70% of us trust them, right? When you go and you find some code, and I'd like you guys to definitely talk back to me here, please. When you go looking for some code online and you find it, why would you trust one side over the other?
Reputation.
Of the person, you recognize the name? Mm-hmm. You win like blog, say, yeah, I like those guys. Me, oh, thank you. Yeah, I paid him. So name. What about if it was my site and you recognized my name, but the site was ugly?
Probably not.
Okay. It's got to look professional. How many times have you gone to a site that had default theme and you kind of go, I don't know, default theme?
Right.
Right? What about a lot of really dense text, a lot of paragraphs? Right? Or maybe the code is formatted weird? Isn't that funny that you'll actually judge the quality of the code that you'll find on the internet based on whether or not they use a nice syntax highlighter or not? Or whether it wraps weird? I don't know if this was going to compile. It wrapped weird there. Isn't this really like judging the philosophy that you would find on the bathroom wall based on the handwriting of the individual who's scratching with the pen in the bathroom stall? It's kind of a similar thing. And 88% of people say moderation is key, but who is moderating? Who is moderating blogs? The bathroom wall of code is what I've called the internet. Is anyone here willing to admit that they have ever taken code directly from Google Groups and pasted it into production? Yeah, this gentleman raised his hand with his head down, which I respect even. Yes. Forgive me, I have sinned. It's been 3 weeks since I pasted code into production. But this happens all the time.
Clipboard inheritance.
Thank you, Phil. That is exactly what it is. And how many people here use Stack Overflow? Really? So the rest of you either don't use it because you find it not useful or don't know what I just said. All right, well, this is interesting. This will be useful. So Stack Overflow, I'm going to go ahead and bring up the interweb here. There, let's bring up my favorite browser instead. Bing, 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 bing. You know, with the power of the Intel processor, I can reboot faster than ever. Stack Overflow, and I'm going to put in Discovery because I asked a question up there. Stack Overflow is a question and answer site. that is a new way of thinking about getting answers on the interwebs. It is done by Jeff Atwood, who's the guy who does codinghorror.com, who's a really smart guy, and Joel Spolsky, who is also a really smart guy, known for Joel on Software. This is one of those sites where you will use it for a few minutes and then kick yourself for not actually creating this site. It's that good. It is the intersection of the kind of the state of the art right now of social networking. It is a blog, it is a wiki, and it is a forum. It is all of those things. Imagine that Venn diagram. It's that middle part where those things mix. Okay? So I show up right here, and it says first time here, and I'll go ahead and just log in. And I can just log in using using OpenID. Or any of the other many, many options. Yada, yada, yada. Use my OpenID provider. I just use my, my website as the OpenID. Lots of ways to use OpenID. So now I just logged in. And let's see what's going on up here. Go away, magnifying glass thing. There we go. So it says Scott Hanselman, and then it says some reputation score. So I'm building up points here. It's kind of like Xbox achievements. I've accomplished something in my tenure here at Stack Overflow. And I've got some medals in this very special kind of Special Olympics where I've got a... gold badge, some silver badges, and bronze badge. I can click on those, take a look at my profile, and see what I've accomplished here. It shows some of the questions that I've asked, some of the answers that I have answered for people, and then some of the badges that I've earned. Down here where it says badges. So, nice answer. Answer voted up 10 times. People ask questions on Stack Overflow, a lot like a forum, except a forum is a free forum discussion. And when you arrive at a forum, you can't really tell what part of the discussion answered the question. The idea of something like Stack Overflow as kind of a new way of thinking around social networking is that a blog is a declaration of, I have an answer, and here it is. I have said, this is something I did. It's neat. There's some hubris in a blog, right? Come to my site and see my answers and my opinions. And then comment on them if you like, and I may delete them because I don't like you. Right? That's a blog. And then a wiki is, right? That's what's my impression of Wikipedia, right? Because that's basically what happens. You know, you don't realize it, but Wikipedia is just a seething mess of just the worst underbelly of the internet. And everything's being reverted and undone, and people are putting mean things about people, and then they're removing it, and then they're adding it back. And it's just this constant game of whack-a-mole with the forces of evil. All the while, you're assuming that, you know, some PhD wrote the article that you're reading, and it turns out it was like a 14-year-old Dutch kid who may or may not have a PhD. But the point is, they're messing around on Wikipedia. You don't have any sense of that I trust this person, right? Why do you trust Wikipedia? Because it seems reasonable, right? So that's a wiki. And then forums are just loose discussion of topics that may or may not be to the point that you want. So what these guys are trying to do is have questions. You can actually ask a targeted question. And then when someone answers it, you can look at it, and the community can vote it up or vote it down. If you're familiar with DIGG, D-I-G-G, this is called upmodding or downmodding. It's a way of crowdsourcing with a single click your positive response or your negative response. It's kind of like those presidential things where they make you watch the president and then turn a knob up or down while you're doing it. They make it really, really easy to provide some feedback. And in this case, you push upmod or downmod, and that's your way of saying, hey, good question. And the idea is that all of us is smarter than most of us. So here I've got nice answers. So that means that some people have voted for some of my answers 10 times. I've got other interesting badges that are a lot more significant, like self-learner. Answered my own question. Critic. First downvote. That's cool. Necromancer. answered a question more than 60 days later with at least 5 votes. So that means I found some really, really old question that everyone had forgotten about, and I brought it back to life. People love to get those badges. It's a badge of honor. You can even buy T-shirts from Stack Overflow with your reputation score. So I went up there, and I asked a question. That I said, well, how can social networking sites make you a better developer? And I said, I'm giving a keynote at Discovery tomorrow at 9 a.m. I'm totally screwed. It's called crowdsourcing, your keynote. I don't want to waste anyone's time. Everyone I talk to uses Twitter. Is it just about getting answers to the question, or is it about the developer's third place? Do you guys know about the theory of the third place? Right? To be a fully formed human, you have to have 3 places, the theory goes, right? Home, work, and somewhere else. Maybe it's Cheers. Maybe it's church. For a lot of us recluses and nerds, it is the internet in some way. It might be Twitter. It might be Stack Overflow. It might be your own blog. And you should be thinking about this in the context of your developer life, because remember, this talk is about social networking for developers. Where is your developer third place? Throw out some of the places you guys hang out. Is it ASP.NET forums? Is it your blog?
Facebook.
Really? As a developer, you spend a lot of time hanging out at Facebook.
Okay. Things are slow right now.
Things are a little slow for you at work right now? Okay. Not exactly what I think you were going with that, but okay. So Facebook, right? MySpace, is that where you also hang out there? Anyone here have a blog? Now, this is really interesting. Okay, large group of people, smart people. I'm going to call you alpha geeks, right? Because you're at a Winilec conference, right? You're not hanging out at Tech Ed, right? You're hanging out with the Richter, you know? You guys know that boxing was almost called Richtering? That's true. No, 3-4 people raised their hands there. Now, that either meant that you've been coding so hard that your arm is so weak you could not raise your hand to say, I have a blog. Or, in fact, here is an entire room full of alpha geeks that don't have blogs. I would go so far as to go out on a limb right here and say that every working professional developer who is interested in their career should have a blog. Discuss. What do you think about that postulate? Shoot it down. Tell me I'm wrong. Talk to me. Maybe the reason you guys don't have a blog is because you don't actually speak. What is my justification for that? Thank you, sir. So, you write for a living, right? You spend a lot of time writing to people. You write multi-paragraph long emails to individuals within your company at some point, right? You reply to all, and you have discussions about design patterns. When you discover an interesting chunk of code, you send it out to people at work, right? Are you conserving your keystrokes when you find yourself slapping out a big long email and you are 2, 3, 4 paragraphs into it, and you've hit 1,000, 2,000 keys, and your hand's starting to hurt, and you're sending it to 4 people, or even 400. Is that the best use of your time as a developer? Conservation of keystrokes. Every time you send an email longer than a paragraph long, is that a better blog post? Is that a Stack Overflow question? Is that something that could add to the collective knowledge? And then here's where it gets into the slippery slope. Is that something that could potentially add to your personal brand? Right? It may be great that you're awesome at your work, but when your work goes away and it's time for me, the new hiring manager, to find out if you're awesome and you wrote all these great emails that are archived at your old work in a PST file, how do I have any proof that you are awesome? You have a finite number of keystrokes that your hands are going to do before they'll fall off or you'll die. This is a measurable number. If you started typing right now and continued typing until you died, we could come up with a number that would be the maximum number of keystrokes that you could use. So there is a finite number between now and death. What are you going to use those keystrokes for, and are you going to influence one N or N plus one people? What do you think about that answer, sir? He's typing an email to work. Absolutely. Absolutely.
To pull it out,
which is why a lot of developers use pseudonyms. I'm not proposing that you necessarily go out and start talking about your square foot garden and your penchant for French movies. I'm not saying about necessarily talking about yourself if you're not a self-promoter, but I am saying put a GUID on you and your brain. You could call yourself Secret Agent 25. And if I go Google for Secret Agent 25, I find some footprint that shows that you're out there. If I go out and if you go out and look for me, you can find, Usenet postings from when I was working at Nike in the mid-90s trying to figure out Java RMI on Netscape 4. I propose, and my postulate is, and again, I'm making declarative statements without anything to back it up, but I believe that that is proof that I am a curious individual who is using the tools that are available to me to get the questions that I want answered. I am leaving footprints on the internet. And I think that there is a personal brand management is becoming a fundamental part of being a developer. And if you are not managing your, the perceptions of you on the internet, when you give me a resume, two guys, same exact resume, right? You've seen the experiments where different people have different races, different names, different cultures, different countries, whatever. Someone has an English-sounding name, someone doesn't. Who do we hire? These aren't the issues anymore. The issues are one guy exists on the internet and one guy doesn't. And when I say guy, I mean that in a non-gender-specific way, ladies. I'm saying that two Fred Smiths show up, Google for one, he doesn't exist. The other guy does. Who am I going to hire? Right? One shows an intellectual curiosity and a need to express themselves and get the answers out there. I didn't necessarily need to have a blog. They could have a Stack Overflow page, or they could have an active Facebook community, or they could be on Twitter. But they're out there and they're interacting, whether it's under a pseudonym or not. Question? That's my theory. Right. So I started my blog. Thank you for pointing that out. I started my blog. Let's find out. Handsomeman.com. There's Jeff Atwood there on the. Just did an interview with him. So I'm going to scroll down here. Here we go. April of 2002. And I said, well, it's up. After screwing with FTP permissions on and off for a week, my weblog is up. Sigh, I'm blogging. We'll see how long it lasts. Right? That's day zero of my blogging experience. Why did I do it? I did it so I could Google myself later with Bing. I wanted to be able to, it was an online journal. I wanted to keep some code up there. How often have you arrived at someone else's site that had the exact answer you wanted, and it starts out by saying, I know that no one's out there, but I'm blogging this for myself so I can find it later. Right? Have you ever, again, not a lot of you sounds like you have your blogs, but sometimes you'll Google for something. I know John could probably say that this happened, where you Google for something and you find that you're the only one who's ever talked on that topic, and then you know that you're screwed. That's when you really, when you feel most alone on social networking is when you look for an answer, you find you're the only one who's ever asked the question. The point I'm making to you and what I'm trying to convince you guys to do is, why are you not blogging? So some people say it's time. I don't have the time. I got kids. I got a life. I got a hobby. That's cool. But I was able to reclaim 2 to 3 hours a week by not sending long emails to people internally and instead putting them on the internet. I worked in banking for a long time, and it was very kind of secretive, and they were always using different clients' code, and people were always saying, well, you really shouldn't blog that code. You know, it wasn't like I was putting the name of the bank namespaces. You know, I do know how to use search and replace. But for 6 years, I blogged code, snippets of code, not secret things. You know, the occasional for loop or clever bit of something that I did, telling a story about a particular bank, changing the names of that bank and the code to protect the innocent, and was never sued. Now, it's certainly possible that that advice will backfire on me or someone. But I think that what Chris Sell said to me one time, which was, if you're not getting slapped by your boss at least twice a year, that you're probably not pushing the envelope in your job enough. Right? If you're not getting in trouble for pushing the envelope, then what are you doing at your job? And why not push the envelope while trying to build your personal brand and get out there and interact? So let me go back over to, and please, do interrupt, because it's good discussion.
I think you've got the voicing problem. I know a lot of developers struggle with a voice.
Finding a voice for themselves?
No,
that's a very good point.
You've got a thicker skin, audiences have kind of gone for you, but I think a lot of developers worry about those first 10 people that are following them.
Yeah. And this is the thing about being, isn't just being an adult like tall grade school? I mean, I'm fully prepared now as a person in my late 30s to go to high school and just totally rock high school. You know, I have all the emotional skills and social interaction and stuff. I could totally be like, you know, Parker Lewis can't lose. I could just destroy high school. It would be like every awesome high school movie that you've ever seen. I would just destroy. But sadly, high school was, you know, 20 years ago, and that's not going to happen for me. The same questions, though, here in tall grade school happen. What will people say? They'll judge me. They'll say it's silly. The trick is to remember that we're all amateurs. This is my opinion. We're all amateurs. And those people out there that you may think, well, except for Jeffrey Richter, but most of the people out there aren't sure about themselves. They're not confident in their abilities. No one is, right? Do they say that Einstein had a horrible problem with being insecure? So you just have to just lean into it. We're all amateurs. Also remember that authorship does not equal authority. Right. Anybody here can write a book, right? Being loud doesn't mean you're right. Me and Jeff Atwood, mediocre programmers at best. Pretty good self-promoters, though, right? So I think that you need to just go out there and you just say, here it is. Here's some stuff. I'm an amateur. I'm learning. And then as soon as someone comes up and says, oh, that's not right, well, then you modify your post, you edit it, and you let them know, well, here, you know, I found this other way. Here's two ways. Not sure which one's right. You just gotta let it roll over you. It's just the internet, right? It's just a river of crap, and you just gotta let it roll over you. Right, so to Mike's point a second ago about mixing personal. So, like, you know, the birth of my son, blogged about it. Birth of the second son, blogged about it. You know, stuff like that. You know, I've blogged about, you know, grandpa dies kind of stuff, you know, just when you feel like you just got to get it out there. But, you know, my kids are getting older now. I refer to them by their ages as opposed to their names now. I put fewer pictures of them up. You know, just kind of common sense. Make sure that your mobile phone with your GPS doesn't automatically update your posts or your Twitter with your latitude and longitude. Right? Important tip for both the ladies and the men. These are just kind of common sense things. If you're going to a conference, you know, driving to the airport now, hope I didn't leave the front door open. just, you know, common sense, right? I've time-shifted conferences, implying that they were at different times. Queuing posts up so they were 3 days one way or the other, so it looked like I was out of town, I wasn't, you know? You got to protect your people, you got to protect your family. Stalkers are out there, absolutely. This is why some people choose to just pick a name. Pick a pseudonym and talk about yourself in the context of that pseudonym. And there's nothing wrong with that either. I know people who have entire identities. But the point is, though, if they say, yeah, go Google for Fred Fredrickson, that's me. And then you can see their fingerprints and their footprint. So Stack Overflow, I asked this question. And you can comment on a question. You can see that this question has been voted up 31 times. So 31 people thought this was a good thing. The crowd is speaking. Other people may be voting it down, but at this point, more people have voted it up. And see, and they're smart enough because they're putting checks in to prevent me from gaming the system. Now, I came down and I wanted to comment on things, and I said, look at this. Two people voted to close this. That's mean. People can actually go and say, close this talk, and say, why would I close this? Well, it's blatantly offensive, of course. Or it's not programming related. People voted to close this because it's not a programming related question. But the people kind of prevailed, and we ended up keeping it open. And then I said, well, you know, I think Stack Overflow kind of discourages discussion. And people said, yes, it is a crappy forum. And I think one of the people said, I can go and say, show more comments. What did he say? Don't take it out on your dog because he can't catch mice. That's not what a dog is for. I thought it was a really interesting question. And this is about knowing the right tool for the right problem. I'm saying this is a really lousy forum. I want to have a discussion here. I tried to start a discussion about social networking at a site that's about targeted Q&A to programmers. So I picked right off the bat the wrong tool to have this discussion. I'm having a meta discussion about the actual site that I'm sitting on there. And I'm saying, you know, help me write my keynote, and why is this such a lousy place to do that? they're saying there's limited replies. Now, the interesting part, though, pretending that this is a question and answer about programming, and I'll show you some more examples, that this first answer here in green is marked green because it was marked as an answer. As set as an, I accept this answer. Of all the answers, this was the best. That means it got put right up to the top. So think about that in the context of forums. You got to dig through the forums by date. You know, who knows? Why does the order in which questions were answered affect whether or not the answer was the right answer? So Stack Overflow allows you to accept an answer, and then it right away comes to the top. So it sorts by correctness, and then it sorts by votes. So 78 people thought this was an awesome answer, and we'll look at that in a second. And then these other answers are just other people's thoughts about things. Now, why was this answer so awesome? And this is why. And this is why I thought that social networks are great. Now, here he says, of course, social networks are loaded with people who will remind you not to wait until the night before a talk to ask such questions. But this is it. The biggest thing, social networking reminds you what a good developer can be. This guy says, you know, I was an awesome developer. I used to think I was a great developer. I was the best developer in my family. Of all my friends, you know. It's like if you go to a 5K and there's a lot of people that are serious runners and you learn about what a real runner looks like. My brother, another Hanselman, is a Portland fireman and is an Iron Man. You know, he's got like an 8-pack or something. He's pow, 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 right? And I've been sucking it in for this entire keynote. He does like Iron Man triathlon stuff, which is like, you know, and he does like what are called Australian Iron Man things, where it's like you don't just run, swim, and then bike, and then you do it again. That's the Australian part. You go and you do the whole thing, and you go, let's do the whole thing again. And then he goes back and he runs another 13 miles, da, 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 right? And he's the most fit person I have ever met in person. That is the level at which my brother is operating. So then he goes and joins some kind of cyclocross kind of thing, some kind of, you know, abuse your body kind of a thing that the kids are doing. And fine, he exited in the lower third of Oregon. I mean, it was just like third from the bottom. He is the pinnacle of human physical muscular perfection, and he is like third from the bottom in Oregon when he actually went out and competed with people who really know what they're doing. That's what social networking does for developers. There's a metaphor I use a lot of time. It's the difference between shooting a bullet and throwing it. You know, you think you can got you you have that velocity, and then you meet someone who really has a gun, and you find out that you've really just been throwing bullets. But this is the thing, though, right? And I appreciate you giving me a hard time, Michael, because how do you become a better programmer? How do you become a better writer? Do you write a lot? That's part of it. But it's also reading a lot. I don't think you can become a really great programmer by sitting in the basement and writing a lot of code. Because at some point, you're just talking to yourself. You don't become a really good writer by just writing a lot. You have to read a lot. You have to interact. You have to hang out with people that are smarter than you. And this is why programming as a discipline is getting to a greater level, I think, than ever before. It's because before, in the 1890s there, with the punch cards and the whatnot, is you find the oldest, smartest person that you know, and you spend time with them. And that's how you become a better programmer. You find a mentor, right? You do that kind of Finding Forrester thing. But now you've got all of those people at your fingertips. Right, you've got the Winlock guys, you've got Uncle Bob Martin, you've got Martin Fowler's got a blog, and all these different people you can have conversations with, and that can help you become a better developer. And that's why I think that everyone should have a blog, is you should get into the conversation, you should manage your perceptions. Michael, you're a smart guy, why don't you have a blog?
I do. Family.
You talk about family. It's just sad. No, I'm just kidding. There was another great answer here about nerds. Why nerds are unpopular. This is another great one. This is a Paul Graham essay from 2003. And Paul Graham is a famous smart hacker type. And the reason is, here we go. This is why nerds are unpopular. This is huge. This is like brain exploding type huge. Of course we don't. It's not useful, right? I'm not going to put any work into that. I'm too busy making my forehead taller. It requires work to be popular. You know, I always used to think in high school that the popular kids just kind of just happened, right? Well, but they were going out for student government, you know, and they were the secretary of the whatever for student government, and they were out doing track and field, right? I was typing in things in the back of Compute magazine. It requires effort to be popular. So it requires effort to be a better programmer because you have to try. And if you want to manage your personal brand, if you are frustrated because you know, no one knows how awesome you are and you're looking for work, it's because it requires effort to manage that personal brand. I'm not saying blog for 2 hours every day. I am saying realize, though, that for the first several years when you blog, no one will listen or care. And then at some point, you will blog something totally unrelated to the topic that you're interested in. And that will become the post that you're known for. And then you need to take that moment and then capitalize on it. Now, a couple people said they had a blog. Okay. Did you have a post that's like the post you're known for, like the one that gets all the traffic?
I have about 4 posts total.
You have about 4 posts? Do any of them get any traffic? Now, why do you have only 4 posts?
It's just...
Not your thing?
Not my thing, yeah.
So in the example of, well, it's not my thing, people are using forums and Stack Overflow as another third place. You don't necessarily have to make like yourlastname.com/blog the center of the programming universe. You can have an identity just by being an enthusiast. There is a guy on Stack Overflow named John Skeet. This is his reputation. He's the number one user on Stack Overflow. John Skeet has 88,000 reputation points and just an ungodly number of medals. He is a god. If you do not realize how famous John Skeet is, we will look at a list of John Skeet facts. Here we go. John Skeet is immutable. If something is going to change, it's going to be the rest of the universe. Users don't mark John Skeet's answers as acceptance, as accepted. The universe marks them out of a sense of truth and justice. Here's a guy who doesn't really think about his blog, but spends time here. He has built that identity. And we can't all be that guy. But he has taken a third place, and he has made it his own, right? He's like Norm from Cheers, right? And when, oh, John, when he shows up on Stack Overflow, this is the spot. John Skeet's code doesn't follow a coding convention. It is the coding convention. He is a legend, and they ended up doing a series of questions that went on and on and on. One of the most popular questions, as well as the follow-up "Who the hell is John Skeet?" Question at the bottom there. And they basically went on and on and on about these John Skeet facts forever, page after page after page. John Skeet does not sleep; he waits. And the irony is that this is a very nice man. He's a very normal individual. But it got so much bigger than him. MSDN is a post-it John Skeet wrote when he was 4.
Look at the time of the post. It's 4:45 a.m.
Yeah. You know, this is a perfect example. It just goes on and on for days. John Skeet hacked the FBI once using an Etch-a-Sketch. When John Skeet throws an exception, nothing can catch it. And here's the best one. There is no control button. John Skeet is always in control. He has taken something and made it his own. Now, you don't necessarily have to do that. But, you know, people use the forums on ASP.NET, on MSDN. Some people have an identity online just by commenting on other people's blogs. So if you like reading blogs, try commenting more. That can be a really great way not only to get involved, feel connected in the community, but also to drive traffic to your own blog. People who make interesting comments often have interesting blogs. That's one of the little secrets, is that people will talk to themselves for years on their blogs and say, you know, I did it for a year, no one came, no one visited, so then you visit their blog and the very last thing they ever wrote was, I'm rededicating myself to blogging. All right, here we go, April 2004. They don't realize that you have to go and read other people's blogs and talk about those things to make that happen. Let's pop back over to here. Is anyone on Twitter? I find this interesting. You guys don't have blogs, but you find Twitter to be useful in any way.
Oh, 6 minutes ago.
You just joined Twitter 6 minutes ago? Awesome. Let's mess with you then. What is your Twitter name, sir, from 6 minutes ago?
Biker Scum.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I picked the right guy. Biker Scum. You already have zero followers. Okay, here we go. This is going to be epic, dude. All right, let's log into the Twitter. Twitter is one of those things where people just, you either get it or you don't, but I want more people to get it because it's not just about talking about, what you had for lunch. At DevScovery, showing folks how to use Twitter. Just saw Biker Scum sign up. Welcome, new user. We'll see how long it lasts. All right, so right there I'm doing a lot of Twittery stuff in the sense of you can see that the numbers are getting down to 13 characters left. You got to conserve your content. You only get 140 characters. I'm using the at sign to refer both to Bethany at the DevScovery account as well as Biker Scum, and I hit update. Now, that goes out, in this case, to the people that are following me. They're subscribed to me. I've got 16,621 people just learned about you, sir.
He has a follower.
He has a follower now. This is huge. Oh, you got two followers. Dude, it's on now, my friend. Welcome to the internet. Now you better be interesting, or we'll crush you. The high-quality content we get here on Twitter, reasons to grow a giant beard, biggerbetterbeards.org. I use Twitter to talk to people in ways that are less threatening than a blog, to the point about, well, I don't really want to get involved, or I'm concerned, I don't want to bother so-and-so, I don't want to comment on this post. It's a much more relaxed environment. Some people just use it to talk to their friends. You can protect your tweets, so it's like Facebook, where it's permissive, and you just say, well, I only want to talk to these four friends, and we'll meet for coffee, and that's what I'm going to do. I like to do it in a more larger kind of social brand management kind of a thing. So people are asking questions like, oh, here it is. So there, Walt just added put a little quote there. So Walt's in the back, and he puts in a quote, and he says, back in the 60s, we had 1K of memory for all society. Right? So if I liked that, or if someone liked that, they would then retweet that little bit of wisdom that I laid on you guys there. And here's someone congratulating me for being vertical. Very nice. Oh, thank you. See? So now I say, oh, there you go. Now he's in the... He couldn't have just said it to me, of course. Remember, we're nerds. We don't talk to each other. Now, here you go. So here's somebody. So he's got... George has got he's got his website there. He's got a link to his site. He's already got 270 people following him. He's engaged in the community. But we can also search for information that matters. And you don't need to sign up for Twitter to do this. And this is another really important thing to know. You can go and find information, for example, about maybe ASP.NET MVC without signing up at all. You can just go to search.twitter.com and there's this river of information that's going on. You can monitor this without signing up. You don't have to engage to listen. So here, we're seeing a lot of really interesting things and we can learn a lot about Twitter just by this initial search. We can see that there's a link going around right now. Two of them I see, kind of like the hot links at the moment. One is Automapper, which is a technique that you use for ASP.NMVC. And we can see that it's been tagged. You see the hashtags, the pound sign tech and the pound sign ASP.NET MVC? That's a way of informally categorizing something. And then I could say, well, I want to see all things within the ASP.NET MVC tag, anything that's tagged that way. Here's a person asking for help with a routing issue, asking for assistance. At some point, people will probably point that guy to Stack Overflow, because it's not really something that you can answer on Twitter. Here's someone posting a presentation. And they're being very nice to credit the people. So Elijah here is a very popular technology Twitterer. All he does is provide useful links. That's his thing. That's his niche. He doesn't talk much, but he always has lots of really useful stuff, and as such has a great number of followers. And he's always careful to say, well, where he got it from. So Indomitable Hef, apparently, is the person that passed that information on. So it's a very social kind of back and forth where people are always sure to give each other credit for things. And then I can also, we use these tiny URL shorteners. See this tiny URL here, it says bit.ly. Because you have such a small number of characters, you use a shortener. That link is actually that. But that would have wasted a lot of space, so we squished it. There's lots of tutorials that'll show you how to do Twitter. And there's clients that you can use rather than the web that will make things easier. And if you go to my blog at handsome.com, I've got step-by-step how to get started, what are the glossaries, what clients should you think about using. You can follow all sorts of interesting people. I find Twitter to be a way of doing permissive stalking. And I mean that in the positive way. It's a way to get near celebrities. Like real celebrities. Like I was watching one of the guys from the TV show Firefly. You know, he's filming a movie, and he's on set. And rather than getting pictures of the stuff on set from his PR person, he's got his phone. He's taking pictures. You know, I mean, that's fantastic. I just think that is such an engaged thing. There's no person between me and Nathan Fillion from Firefly, and then you'll share in jokes. In the sense of like, he's like, chaos on the cast of whatever. And then he sends a picture of broccoli from the craft services table. Just, random weird stuff. And you find out what someone is like because of these kind of weird things. You find out I've learned that a number of programmers that I admire are very, have unusual political opinions. And there was a really interesting discussion where it was like, well, I want to follow this person, let's say, because they're an awesome technologist. And another person says, well, I don't agree with them politically. They're evil. They're too far one way or the other. And someone pointed out very wisely, when you follow someone on Twitter, you are following the whole person, which I thought was a really powerful statement. I mean, here's a person who probably 40% of what he talks about I completely disagree with. And he's going on and on about political things that I don't care about. But I respect the individual, I respect the work that he does, and there's a lot of really good technical content there, and I have accepted that I am going to follow that entire person. So that gets to Michael's point about you got to go out there and you got to be yourself, you got to decide what matters to you and what doesn't, and yes, people will like it or not like it, but ultimately people are starting to realize that we are entirely individuals. Someone said to me recently that they were going to unfollow me. This means that they're going to stop listening to me on Twitter. And it was funny, I thought, because they announced it on Twitter. Too much noise, unfollowing Hanselman. Yeah, well, it happens a lot. And it turned out that their expectation was that I was going to just lay all sorts of 140-character wisdom on them. That Twitter with me was going to be just an ongoing flow of like cool links and awesome ASP.NET MVC stuff. And instead, it was pictures of the zucchini from my square foot garden, or it was the arcade machine I was building, or it was my son's getting a haircut kind of stuff.
It's like you said in your tutorial, don't think you're going to be able to keep up with it all, but you won't.
Yeah, because it just doesn't matter. Here you go. Lost 12 pounds. What's the new diet that's sweeping the nation? Food poisoning. And then unfollowing Hanselman. This is nonsense. Well, follow the whole person, or the person who's 12 pounds lighter at this point. The point is that we are, real people, and I'm choosing to do this. There are others that choose to say, well, maybe I'll have two blogs or two Twitter accounts.
What about something that you're embarrassed about? You wrote it, and now you think...
Oh, you delete it. Just delete it. This is one of the funniest things about Twitter, is that because things show up on the news or someone will do something stupid, like recently there was a, and I said before I follow a lot of actors and stuff because I'm into, you know, entertainment and stuff like that. A person was tweeting rude comments during an audition. This was a big scandal in Hollywood, and a big scandal meaning like tiny scandal, for these three people who care about this stuff. They were a casting director, and there was an audition, and they were tweeting mean things. And it turned out that the people who were giving, who were the actors who were auditioning, found those tweets. Well, the person then deleted them, but of course everyone's, you know, caught them. There's a window of some number of minutes to hours before these things escape. And that's one of the things they say when you put an image on the internet, if it's out there for more than an hour, it's always out there. You can never, ever, ever get it back. With tweets, if I misspell something, delete it, post it again. If it's something stupid, you know, you will say stupid things and they will get out there. You can delete them, although that gets into what they call revisionist history, which is really frowned upon. Usually better to follow up with a, you know, this is why this happened, or here's the context, or whatever. But being embarrassed online is a big part of being online. There was a... there's so many crazy things. Famous last tweets. Yeah, there's a good one. This is a joke. Alta Vista. As if Twitter were around in 1997, basically saying, Google? Yeah, that'll happen. There's people on Twitter doing historical tweets that are tweets from... people in history. So you've got like, where's the one? There's a, yeah, you know, Cleopatra. There's all these different people who are tweeting as historical characters. There's actually a school. I forgot the name of the school, but they're tweeting. It's really kind of clever. They're tweeting the Battle of Gettysburg. Okay, in the actual time frame with all the actual characters. As if it were actually happening in real time, just time shifted 150 years. But this is a way that they are engaging their students, their audience. People are getting updates, you know, oh, General's coming over the hill. You see Lincoln on his BlackBerry. There is a lot of really interesting uses. There's Twitter haiku, and it's a fun environment, and I think it's worth taking a look at. But that's not Stack Overflow, blogs, Twitter are not the only examples of being social online. GitHub is an interesting way to be social online. This is actually social source control. So you guys use like SourceForge or, you know, SVN or TFS. Typically those things are not particularly friendly for the internet. But GitHub is doing some pretty interesting stuff. Like, for example, you can link to a specific file and a specific line number. Why is that a big deal? Why is that an important feature of something online? Why would you want to know about that? Well, because by adding that simple feature, I can then refer to something. I can refer not just to a file, but to a line number in a single URL. And they've just made instantly their source control system social. Let me fire that up. Go right to a particular... looks like that browser doesn't like being inside of Microsoft right now. And get right down to a particular line. Yeah. Looks like they've got a JavaScript error, so my demo is less impressive there because they're doing something wrong. But there is a way to link to it, and then what I would have expected to see, although we have a JavaScript error here, was that line would have highlighted. So now I can refer to that snippet of code. I can hand that snippet to someone and say, look at this, check that line out. They've also, go ahead.
What if the code changes? Somebody adds a line or delete the line?
Right, so they've got complete history, all online, and that history can be seen. You can see the different people that referred to it. You can even see a public timeline. Let's go back out to that. Here's an actual feed of people checking in. You can see where they are as far as like where they are in the tree. People typically take these names and they'll claim them. So even though identity on the internet hasn't been solved yet, for the most part, S. Hanselman is me, even though I might be S. Hanselman at one place and S. Hanselman at another place. So you may find as you wander around, you want to pick a name that'll be the same everywhere. So you know, I don't know these people, but probably this guy here, C.A. Yeager, probably uses that username everywhere, uses the same icon to represent themselves. That's kind of an informal thing that you start to get to know people by these identities. Interestingly, in the open source community, I see more and more people using pseudonyms and using hacker type profile names, perhaps because they're younger, rather than their actual full names. One guy even moved his blog to GitHub, meaning that he checks in his blog posts. Because GitHub allowed you to refer to lines, refer to particular files, and subscribe as if you were subscribing to a blog to someone's check-ins. So just like I could receive in my blog reader, in Google Reader, information about what someone's doing on their blog, you can get RSS to push all sorts of information. And GitHub says, well, here is the RSS feed of check-ins. So you can actually subscribe to your favorite programmer's code as if you were receiving check-in mail at work. These are all ways that they're starting to make source control social. And there are things up at GitHub like a thing called Gist. And GitHub's just one example. There are other things. Gist basically is a big text box, and you drop in some code, and then you get a link to it, and then you can hand that to somebody so that they can see the gist of what you're talking about. So here's a gist. Don't know anything about it, just found it. But it's a little snippet of code that somebody pasted in here, and you got a nice friendly URL to it with a number, nice and short. And here GitHub has just enabled sending that short little chunk of code on Twitter. It's small, didn't have a big GUID. This is the difference between kind of Web 1.0 and Web 2.0, is that they're thinking about that kind of stuff, right? We, and I apologize for using the collective, but we would probably have something like, you know, yada, 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 slash getfile.aspx ?GUID equals GUID. And we'd say, well, that's a perfectly reasonable URL that would handle exactly what we need. And we wouldn't think about, well, gosh, when I email that, it's going to break. The line breaks will break. Or when I put that on Twitter, it's going to get shortened anyway. By having the URL shortener baked in automatically, they're getting kind of free advertising. It's not getting obfuscated and squished into a smaller place. And now my awareness of that, or other sites like it, there's another one called pasty.org, where you can just paste in some code. You can search little chunks of code. Thank you. There's also codepaste.net. There's all sorts of different sites where you can share snippets of code in social ways. Very often, you'll find yourself pasting code into an IM chat. Paste it into something like this, and then paste the link to that. People can interact. Try going to shanselman.etherpad.com for those of you that are playing Doom right now. And go to shanselman.etherpad.com/5. Start typing, unnamed person. Don't swear or anything. See all the people showing up? Make sense? Collaborating together in a shared notepad. Let's not be naughty, because this is being filmed. This is useful how? Let me reverse. I engineer his IP address. Now, this is useful how? This is exceedingly useful. If I'm going to be working on a chunk of code or collaborating on, on an outline or or anything like that, that, sorry, I have control. Well, you have all sorts of, you know, of course you have security and passwords and all these different things that
but
you could potentially
like
do. Sure, absolutely. We just did. We were just doing that live right there. That's just kind of taking the. You can see where I'm going with this. Kind of the next level. You can do things at the source control level, and you can share them. You can bring them on Twitter. You can share them on Facebook. You can put them on your blogs. You can go all the way up to the point where you're doing it dynamically, interactively, on the internet all at the same time. It's becoming so easy to do those kinds of things now that I'm finding that I feel more connected to the community than ever before. I've even had, done basically peer programming, with people that I don't know. Be on Twitter, you say, anyone know anything about WPF? Yeah, I got 5 minutes, and then we interact. It's a lot of fun. You may have, it's like having a pen pal, like in the old days, where you didn't quite know them 100%. There are non-threatening and anonymous ways for you to do things like that and talk to people on Stack Overflow. So I want to talk a little bit about brand management and about the context of making your blog not suck and hopefully get you guys to start blogging. But I will say that there are some reasons that you would not necessarily want to blog, right? If you're in some huge high-ticket business, maybe you're the world's leading software developer or something like that. No, wait. if you fight with your employees in public, this is a really big thing. You can learn a lot about a person when they go online. You can find out kind of the core of what someone is about. Have you ever interviewed someone and then Googled for them with Bing and found that they were not a nice person when you were going to interview them? I had a person we were going to interview, and we started looking for them up online. And the first hit for that person's name was a post that they'd made about their CTO. I said, I don't make up a name, Fred Johnson, right? And the title of the blog post was like, Fred Johnson is an asshat. I had to look up asshat, and it is not a flattering term. And it was full of all sorts of kind of offensive imagery and immature animated GIF clip art. This person had been fired from their job, which is fine, right? We all get fired at some point in our lives. And then railed on that person on the internet, on their own blog. Forgetting, of course, that there's this, search engine thing out there that makes looking these things up really, really easy. I don't have interest in hiring someone who would take bile and give that bile a permalink. Right? It's one thing to be a jerk, but do it in person, for God's sake, with the cameras off. You know what I mean? Don't give a person a link to you being a jerk. I've showed you ways you can give code a link down to the line number, but don't give your anger a permalink.
What about unexpected hash collisions?
What is an unexpected hash collision?
Yeah, it's not really your name, but somebody with your name.
Hey, you explain it away. Change your name, right? No, I mean, yes, those kind of things happen. There are two other web developers named Scott Hanselman.
And an actor.
Hmm? And a really good-looking actor. I like to tell people that I'm that actor. Go to IMDb and look up Scott Hanselman. You can see some of my work in Ninja Nurses 2, I think it was.